Welcome to Motive and Method. I'm Tim Watson-Munro, criminal psychologist.
And I'm Dr. Xanthi Mallett, criminologist from the University of Newcastle.
Well, the headlines have been rich with tragedy in the last couple of weeks. Last week, we discussed the disappearance and alleged murder of Samantha Murphy in Ballarat. And today, we're going to talk about the deaths of Jess Baird, age 26, and Luke Davis, age 29, which rocked the Sydney community, and more broadly, as more lives were allegedly lost to male violence. Days after the sad news of their deaths broke, police announced that they were searching for an active New South Wales police officer, Beau Lamar Condon, aged 28 years, who was subsequently arrested and charged with two counts of murder. Now, we can't talk about him, it's sub judice, but we can talk about how it unfolded and why this case has resonated so deeply with the whole community. In terms of the timeline, on Monday the 19th of February at about 9:50 a.m, gunshots heard at Jess Baird's Paddington, Sydney home by neighbours. The police say witness reports vary between hearing one shot and several, but CCTV captured by a nearby security camera reportedly captures two audio or three shots being fired in quick succession. One used cartridge was found at the scene days later. A 000 call was made at 9:54 a.m. from Baird's home, although it disconnects.
And I also heard that the police couldn't actually identify where that call had come from, which is why apparently they didn't actually attend Jessie Baird's home that day. They are obligated to follow up on calls, but they couldn't actually identify which particular house that call had been lodged from.
Well, it would have been difficult, and they probably didn't anticipate what they eventually found. Lamar Condon allegedly hires a white Toyota Hiace and transports Jess and Luke's bodies to another location.
And on the Tuesday, now remember, the public knew nothing about this at the moment. So we move forward to the next day. So obviously, this is fully, you know, this event is fully active at this stage, although even the police know very little about it. So Tuesday, the 20th of February, police allege, and we're going to scatter a lot of alleges through this because obviously this case is before the courts and we do not want to get cut. Caught up in sub judice issues. So police allege Lamar Condon made partial admissions to an acquaintance about being involved in the deaths of two people. A service pistol, which was a Glock, was allegedly signed out by Lamar Condon on the 16th of the 2nd, and that was actually taking out for what's known as a user pay event, which is in essence where another entity can hire police officers. In this case, the government hired them to police an event, but it's outside of the normal kind of policing day-to-day work. This particular Glock was signed back into Miranda Police Station a few days later. I think that was on the 20th. So it'd been out for 4 days, that Glock, as a result of being signed out for a user pay event. Now, the police will allege that the bullet casing located at the murder scene of Jesse and Luke was in fact linked to that service weapon. Also, on the 20th, Jesse's friends received what we would call proof of life texts from Jesse's phone. So these were to some of his housemates saying he planned to move to WA and asking them to sell his furniture. So whoever sent those, we know that Jesse was dead at this point. Obviously, his friends did not. But whoever sent those obviously knew how to access Jesse's phone and knew enough about him to be sending messages to his friends that seemed legitimate. Police contacted Jesse's mum, at which point she immediately told them that her son had been stalked by a man named Beau. She didn't know a surname, apparently, who was regularly turning up to Jesse's home. She believed he was a police officer or an ex-police officer and stated if something had happened to Jesse, that Beau was allegedly responsible.
The following day, on Wednesday the 21st of February, at about 11 a.m, bloodied clothing and other items belonging to Baird and Davies, including an $8,000 watch, credit card and wallet, were found in a skip bin in Cronulla, some 30 kilometres from Paddington. This led to the police launching a missing persons investigation, and the homicide squad was also notified. It was the first time the media and the public knew something was wrong. At about 1 p.m., the police arrive at Jess's house, to find three cleaners mopping the floor. The crime scene was subsequently set up at Baird's Paddington home after a significant amount of blood was found there. A bullet hole was also allegedly found. Documents reveal that a female housemate of Jess's saw a tarpaulin in the backyard under which there were two surfboard bags, which she nudged with her foot and took three photographs. There was also what she thought was beetroot juice leaking from one of the bags. At about 2 p.m., the police visit Luke's nearby Waterloo home. The police allege that Lamar Condon and a female friend who is not implicated and who is fully cooperating, who went to Bungania near Goulburn, some 185 kilometres south of Sydney CBD, where they bought an angle grinder and a padlock from a local hardware store, after which they went to a rural property nearby. Police allege that Lamar Condon had a link to the property and at the property alleged that he used the angle grinder to remove a padlock on a gate, which was replaced by the one that they had purchased. The friends stayed at the gate at the top of the property for about half an hour while Lamar Condon allegedly disappeared in the hired IACE van they were travelling in. He then returned and they drove back to Sydney. It's alleged that about 11 p.m. that day, Lamar Condon bought weights from a department store before returning to the same property in Bungania. Police have alleged that he did this because he had become suspicious of his friend and went back to move the bodies.
We then move forward to Thursday, the 22nd of the 2nd. Police say in their timeline, they still got some gaps. So they're still appealing for public assistant to help fill them in. Because remember, this is still very early on in this investigation, although an individual has been arrested and has been charged for double murder. The police are still building their case. So they are still appealing for information to help fill in some of these gaps as they move forward. The police allege that Lamar Condon had the white Hiace in his possession throughout the entire day on the Thursday, the 22nd. And allegedly leaving Bungonia for Sydney at about 4:30 a.m. Late the same day, he's alleged to have driven to the property of a different acquaintance of his, a former police officer in Newcastle. So he'd been south to Bungonia. Now he's going north, allegedly, to Newcastle. It's about 170 kilometres north of Sydney CBD, where he asked for a hose to clean the Hiace. He didn't disclose any criminality at this stage to that acquaintance. News of Jesse and Luke's disappearance broke around lunchtime of that day, after which the police held a press conference where they appealed for public assistance, saying that they held grave concerns for the missing men. So it was clear at this stage that whatever had been located at those men's homes was enough to give the police serious cause for concern for their safety. In the evening of the same day, it was reported that the police were searching for a serving police officer over the couple's disappearance. He was then identified as Beau Lamar Condon, and the police were actively seeking him for a number of days after that. At 11 p.m. that day, officers raided the home of one of Lamar Condon's family members in Balmain, where they seized a number of items. What those items were hasn't been disclosed as yet, and if they are what we would call forensically relevant, that may be disclosed at committal in a few months' time. Lamar Condon's location remained unknown at this stage.
On the following day, Friday the 23rd of February, at 5 a.m, Lamar Condon allegedly left Newcastle, arriving back in Sydney at about 6:15 a.m. The white hired Toyota Hiace was found by police in the southern Sydney suburb of Grays Point near the Royal National Park. At about 10:39 a.m, Lamar Condon handed himself in at a Bondi police station, where he was arrested, transferred to Waverley Police Station, and then later in the afternoon, he was charged with Jess and Luke's murders. That evening, he appeared in court, where he was denied bail. He spent the night at Silverwater Correctional Complex, and at that point, nobody knows where the bodies of Luke and Jess are, but the police must have had some compelling evidence to charge him with the murder.
And as you say, we didn't know where Jesse and Luke's bodies were at this point. We're a number of days into their disappearance. They obviously allegedly were murdered on the Monday. We're now all the way through to the Saturday. And the police continued to search right through the Sunday, the 25th. They searched a dam, if you remember those images that were coming in from helicopter shots. There were lots of images of police vans, searchers, forensic personnel out of that dam at a property off Hazelton Road in Bungonia. So the police search was very much focused around Bungonia at this point. The search continued on the Monday. However, nothing was found. Divers didn't find anything. But this was obviously a very large, comprehensive search. The murder at this stage was pronounced as a critical incident as a result of a serving police officer being the accused. And in essence, what that means is that there's going to be wider scrutiny of the incident, how it happened, why it happened, how he allegedly had access to that service weapon, that Glock that we mentioned earlier. All of that will be part of this scrutiny that will take place in the months to come.
On Tuesday, the 27th of February, the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Karen Webb, says the search was widening, not narrowing, and other properties continue to be searched. At about 11 a.m. on that day, Lamar Condon changes legal counsel and investigators speak to him again, at which point he allegedly discloses the location of Jess and Luke's bodies. At 1 p.m. on the day, police find Luke and Jess's bodies in surfboard bags, and at 3:30 p.m., senior police, including the Chief Commissioner, hold a press conference and confirm that bodies that have been found are those of the missing men. They confirm that Lamar Condon has been stood down without pay.
And if you remember, they were very focused on a water search. And I think that was because Lamar Condon had allegedly bought weights at a shop, you know, after the incident, potentially, allegedly, to weigh the bodies down. So there'd been a very intense search on the dams of some of these properties. However, when Jesse and Luke's bodies were found, they weren't in water. They were just kind of to the side, like, if you remember, under that greenery, they'd been hidden by some kind of twigs and leaves and things. So they weren't actually submerged in water when they were recovered. But this is a number of days later, you have to remember. Wednesday the 28th, police search an area where Luke and Jesse's bodies were found, and that is going to continue because they're looking for more evidence. Details begin to emerge about Lamar Condon's alleged behaviour before the murders. Now, this is where I think we had some quite interesting conversations because there were some potential red flags being raised with this individual before these events happened. Allegedly, there was escalating obsession with Jesse on Lamar Condon's part. And the accused it's been stated that he'd broken into Jesse's home. He damaged his car by pouring water into the engine block, keying it. And the police also allege at this time that Luke and Jesse's bodies were at the property in Bungonia for a day and a half before Lamar Condon moved them to the location at which the police found them. So in essence, by the Wednesday, information is coming out thick and fast, not only about what happened, but also about the accused and his potential links to the victims. There is only a link, apparently, to Jesse. Luke is, sadly, he may have just been in the wrong place at the wrong time, in that Luke and Jesse only began dating in February. It was very new. The allegation that the police will make is that Lamar Condon went round to Jesse's home with the aim to premeditatedly murder him, but that Luke was there, that this was unexpected, and that he was collateral damage, in essence. So it's just a sad case of being, for Luke, in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's tragic. It's tragic for both of them. But,
absolutely. Yeah, both families, awful.
Well, who is Lamar Condon? It seems from the material we've looked at that he was a person that was obsessed with celebrity and obsessed allegedly with attention seeking. And by way of example, as a teenager, he threw a note on stage at a Lady Gaga concert, which she read out live. She then asked him backstage where he stayed and talked for a number of hours.
At least that's what he told people.
Well, of course, who knows what the reality is. His obsession with celebrity continued into adulthood. He hosted two defunct celebrity websites.
These are like fan sites, you know, where he'd go and post pictures of him and meeting them and all of that.
He was a kind of a selfie chaser, wasn't he?
Yes, absolutely. He'd attend these red carpet events. He'd want his picture taken next to like the serious A-listers. And we're talking big names like Miley Cyrus, Russell Crowe, Taylor Swift, Ryan Gosling, and all of these are going up on his website. So he's got an obsession with that celebrity and wanting to be part of that crowd.
And I might say, not speaking about him, but I've had clients over the years that it's almost an addiction for them. They live and breathe it. They get up, they kind of see where celebrities are going to be. And in a way, they stalk them, you know, with the sole intention of getting a photograph they can then put on Instagram or Facebook or other social media outlets.
Well, that was happening with Taylor Swift's concert, wasn't she? As she was moving around the globe, there were people who were basically stalking her via her plane's activity. And she asked them to stop because this was putting her in danger. Because obviously, if people are constantly putting online where these people are, that literally puts them at risk from obsessive fans.
There's a lot of them out there. So with Lamar Condon, he allegedly interviewed or took pictures with celebrities such as Miley Cyrus, Russell Crowe, Taylor Swift, and Ryan Gosling. This was before he joined the police force. His mother and sister have both been employed by the New South Wales Police Force, and his father is a security guard. In 2020, he made headlines when he tasered a suspect, and a video of that went viral. I don't know.
Have you seen that video?
I have. It's very, very troubling.
It is. It is. Although he was cleared of wrongdoing in that event, I think, wasn't he? But also, weren't they arresting that man for resisting? Well, they were resisting arrest, allegedly. And I saw that event, and he tasered him at very close quarters. Although, yeah, the body cams were on and he was cleared, wasn't he? But also, the man was cleared of trying to resist arrest.
Yeah, it sounds like sweeping under the carpet exercise in many ways.
Well, we'll find out. That will be part of the critical incident review.
We'll certainly find that out. Friends say that Lamar Condon and Jess were friends. They had not been in a couple relationship, but Lamar Condon had developed deeper feelings which were not reciprocated. And how often do we hear this?
And I think that's the crux of it, isn't it? That that we will get to kind of that's, if he is in fact guilty, and we're a long way from that being proven beyond reasonable doubt, this could be, you know, something that will be discussed further.
Lamar Condon later allegedly portrayed the pair falsely as a couple on social media.
And you have to remember that Jesse is somewhat of a celebrity in his own right, correct? So he used to be a presenter on Channel 10, so he would have provided Lamar Condon that celebrity need, that filler of that need that he seemed to have been seeking ever since he was a teenager.
He, by all accounts, was a rising star. I've seen some of the footage of him on television. He had presence, charisma, and charm.
And intelligence, you know, which is a winning package in television.
Absolutely. We still strive for it, I guess. One of Jess's friends, Corey Dean Thorpe, told the media that Jess had been followed home by a police car in August 2023, and Jess felt like someone had been standing over him in bed. I read some press article where he thought there was an apparition or a ghost-like figure at the end of his bed, but he said nothing about it. The police further alleged that Lamar Condon began a month-long campaign of predatory behaviour, breaking into Jess's home and accessing his phone to erase contacts and messages. Lamar Condon has not been granted bail, and he's being held in isolation at Silverwater Complex. He's set to next appear in court on the 23rd of April, 2024.
And he is being held in isolation, I imagine, for his own protection. You have to remember that he was a serving police officer when arrested, and that makes you extremely unpopular in prison. So he will need to be in there for his own sake. So, and I imagine he will remain in isolation at Silverwater until that April call date. So there are a number of issues, I think, with this case. Obviously, we have the awful tragedy of the deaths of these two young men, totally pointless, pointless deaths, just awful for the entire community. But it has raised some other issues around this. And if you remember, so this all happened mid to late February, and then the Sydney Mardi Gras was due to take place on the 2nd of March. So very shortly after all of this was still very much in the media when it occurred. There were calls for the New South Wales Police Force not to attend Mardi Gras. They've been attending for over 20 years, I believe.
Community involvement thing, and a very good thing.
Exactly. They've had floats. It's a way of building their links to the LGBTQI plus community. And it's always been a little bit contentious, though, because of the history between the two and police violence towards that community and other groups. And so there's always been tension around it. And this led to renewed calls for the police force not to march in this year's event. And that would be the first time, I think, in 20 years that they wouldn't have marched. So there was some pushback on that, and it changed. The Mardi Gras board changed their minds and basically said that the police could march,
but not in uniform.
Correct. Yes. And so I think that was the compromise that was met. Police Commissioner Karen Webb was pleased that compromise. I think she would have been very disappointed if the police hadn't been allowed to march. They marched in, I think, like blue t-shirts in the end. And Commissioner Webb was one of those individuals there. So that issue, I think, took over some of the discussions that I think were slightly misdirected. I'm not diminishing the history between the police and that community. It's been very poor at times and it's still tense. However, this was not a gay hate crime. This was a crime between somebody who allegedly became obsessed with somebody else, was rejected and killed them. So I think that conversation was a little misplaced around the Mardi Gras. Obviously, I'm not part of that community, so I wouldn't want to speak for them. But to me, I wouldn't want to see a distraction from the real issues that led to this awful event from happening.
Well, I'm not diminishing it either. It's a huge tragedy for everybody involved, but it's the classic stuff that we've discussed so many times, generally men killing women. On this occasion, a male allegedly killing two other males. But it would seem from what I've read, the red flags were there. And I want to speak in general principles, not specifically about this case. But it's the same old thing, stalking, obsession, not coping with rejection. How many times have we discussed?
Correct. All the same things. Yep.
And really the offender, the perpetrator of the violence, you know, we look at Hannah Clark, for example, we'll discuss that. Viewing their former partner or their aspirational partner as a chattel, as a belonging, and attendant to that, a sense of ownership, and attendant to the rejection, very glass doors that they can't cope with it. And it just leads them down a very dark path, doesn't it?
And I guess that was kind of where I wanted to kind of bring this discussion to a kind of head, I think, because if you remember Commissioner Webb in that press conference, it was very ill-worded when she said that she believed that this wasn't a hate crime, that it was a crime of passion. And I think she winced when she said that, because this was certainly not a crime of passion. There was nothing passionate against. This is alleged interrelationship. So in essence, kind of a domestic violence, alleged murder, double murder. And so I think passion is not a word that I would ever attribute to that. It's about violence. It's about revenge. It's about ownership. It's about all of those other things you mentioned. And the fact that it's in a homosexual relationship is irrelevant in essence. All of that dynamic remains the same. And if anything comes out of this, I would like to see more discussion around violence, interpersonal, family, domestic violence in homosexual relationships, which we know anecdotally is a major problem, decided it is in heterosexual relationships. And that is where I would like to see the discussion more openly. And how do we diminish that violence? Men's violence, that's what it comes down to mostly. I know some women do commit violence in those relationships, but the people generally doing the murdering are largely men. And I think that's where the discussion is, men's violence rather than all of the other things that got drawn into this in kind of, I think, slightly sideways, distracting from the main issues that need to be addressed.
Well, I think people were bewildered, they were angry, they were hurt. And the fact that the alleged offender was a serving member of the police force, they got caught into the whole dynamic, and I think unfairly so. I mean, the fact that he worked as a policeman, in my view, is irrelevant to what he did. It certainly perhaps gave him access to firearms, as it gave him alleged opportunity and so on. But as you say, Zath, I think this is really about domestic violence. Whether it's a man killing other men or a man killing woman, the dynamics are very much the same. And, you know, I've assessed a lot of people in a situation who are charged with serious crimes like this, and it's inevitably jealousy, inadequacy, not being take no for an answer.
Correct. All the same, same old, same old.
And then sort of rich fantasies about revenge. And I'm not talking about this alleged offender.
Correct.
I want to make it quite clear. I'm talking in general principles. But in general principles, that tends to be what happens. And then I think the important thing is if there's red flags, and we've discussed this too, it sort of behoves people to pick up on them and speak
Correct.
About them.
And report them.
Intervene.
Report them to police. In this case, it's the alleged offender was a serving police officer. Had this been reported to police, all sorts of procedures and mechanisms would have been brought in, firearm safety, for example. So sadly, this may have been prevented, but I do wonder, because we're looking at a homosexual relationship, maybe people weren't as concerned about Jesse and, you know, those alleged break and enters and the damage to the car and the stalking as they would have been had it been a woman going through that. Maybe they thought that, you know, a guy can kind of look after himself. I don't know. But I'm just saying, if you're scared for your friends, your family, report it to police.
Yeah, I don't think we know. Certainly I hear from women who have survived episodes of domestic violence that often when they complain about it, they too are not listened to. You know, there's exasperation and desperation. That they're
Correct. Yeah.
And there seems to be, and I'm not criticizing the police, it's just an observation that at times there's a reluctance to intervene in these cases. And a number of people have said to me over the years, well, we really can't do much until he kills you, you know, and literally, or he severely damages you. Now, to be fair, I think the law has tightened up on this quite a bit.
After some very high profile cases, such as Hannah Clark and her children in Queensland, and we may now see changes in New South Wales. So I think this problem is being taken more seriously.
Well, it certainly is in the courts. You know, if a person receives an AVO, an apprehended violence order, they don't need to do much at all for it to be briefed. A telephone call, a text message, any form of contact can lead to them being arrested and then incarcerated on remand. And they are then in a show cause situation as to why they should be released to bail with strict conditions. Now, that's a positive development. Some would say that it's overreach and that these AVOs can be weaponized by disgruntled partners. But clearly, as the statistics reflect, one woman a week is killed in Australia.
More than, yeah.
How many men are killed as well?
And that's only the tip of the iceberg. What about all the others that are suffering domestic family violence that we don't hear about? That's the problem, isn't it?
Well, a lot of people don't report because they're frightened to, or they live in the misguided belief that it will improve.
Yes.
It's see what you made me do stuff. See what you made me do, but if you change your behaviour, I won't do it anymore. I mean, it's palpable nonsense. And it never works anyway, because they might change their behaviour and they'll find another grievance to pick on them and bully them and cajole them.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, this comes down to interpersonal violence, doesn't it? It's not about those other issues, like extraneous issues, but we will hear more as the months go forward. The police procedure is going to be reviewed by an independent probe that was announced by the commissioner, led by a senior Victorian police officer. So they've gone outside the force. And I think that's very smart for transparency reasons. I think that was necessary, that the issues around gun control, safety, et cetera, will be reviewed independently and a report will be handed down, because obviously the allegations are a service weapon was used in these murders. And the review will also look at the psychometric and other tests that Lamar Condon took when he joined the police back in 2019. So it's going to be interesting to see if any recommendations come out of that report. And I'm sure that if there are recommendations, the commissioner and police minister will take those very seriously, because nobody wants to see this happen again.
Well, the important thing out of all these tragedies, not just this one, is that people put a microscope to it and look at the dynamics in play and see where things can be improved in terms of operating procedures. I still, you know, one of my big things is recognizing the red flags, educating people.
Exactly.
And if you sense this thing, get out, because it'll only get worse.
Exactly. And so that was Motive and Method, looking at the very tragic and sad deaths of Jesse and Luke and the allegations put by New South Wales Police against Volamar Condon. And we will update you as things move forward across the months and things attend court, etc. So thank you very much for listening. I'm Dr. Xanthi Mallett.
And I'm Tim Watson-Munro.
Thank you.